Hello, this is Paul Sollentrop of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. Thank you for listening to the Roundhouse Podcast. Today we have PJ Kuznard, a former Shocker basketball player. He's going to talk to us about a docuseries about his life in basketball, what he's doing now in his hometown of Houston. PJ played for the Shockers from 2004 to 2008, highlighted by 2005 NIT run, 2006 NCAA tournament Sweet 16. PJ averaged 10.3 points and 5.4 rebounds for his career. He was on the All-Missouri Valley Conference defensive team three times. Twice he was honorable mention All-Missouri Valley Conference. PJ is the founder of Kuz Elite Sports, which is a basketball, football, athletic training program in Houston for grade school and high school boys. He is also the head coach at Legacy, the School of Sports Sciences, which is a charter school in Houston. So he is the subject of a Kuz story, C-O-O-Z. We'll talk about how that name came about. It's a three-part docuseries by filmmaker Michael Sneed II. He describes the docuseries as being about Houston and a Third Ward legend, PJ Kuznard, and his basketball team, Kuz Elite, how it all began, the struggles, the lives that his program has saved. The series, part one, is up on YouTube. Parts two and three will come out in early May and early June. So, PJ, let's start by give us your description of Kuz Elite, the basketball program, the off-the-court program. Tell us about the program.
Man, so it's just basically an outreach, you know, for kids in our neighborhood, for kids that I didn't see birth and, you know, kind of grow up in the neighborhood and grow up facing a whole bunch of, you know, adversity that most people don't even understand or don't even know exists, you know. And it's just basically we try to get these kids and love on them. The concept came from just me growing up with a group of about 12, 13 consistent friends. And, you know, I was the only one to go to play college basketball out of them. I probably was the only one to initially go to college. And me having to worry about them while I was off in college every night, making sure nothing happened to them, you know, and that type of stuff. And I lost a lot of them, lost my closest friends. So the concept of, hey, let me get a group of kids, you know, as many as I can and make them friends and put them in the basketball world. And because I noticed, when I go to sleep at night, I'm not too worried about them because they, you know, probably getting up to go work out or do something. They don't have to make ends meet, per se, you know. So I got a group of kids. It started with a group of kids and it blossomed into a neighborhood, a whole city of kids, and to, you know, get them all under the same roof so they don't have to worry about their friends doing the wrong thing, their friend right in the gym with you, you know, your friend working out with you, your friends doing this and doing that, so you don't, you know, have to lose close friends or close ones to you.
So this story starts with your mom and dad moving to Houston and your dad's work in the ministry and you growing up in that environment where he was helping a lot of different people, a lot of different kids. So how did their work, how did that upbringing inspire what you do now?
Oh, it was the blueprint. So I watched my mom and dad closely. Like when you watch the documentary, I was a part of what they was doing at a young age. You know, I was going to deliver gifts and turkeys and stuff to families at 9-10 years old. And so I watched my mom and dad do it, and I watched them do it with nothing. So it made me, you know, take little sticky notes of what to do and how to do it and how to make it better. And then me growing up the way I did helped me gain avenues and be able to reach out to certain people that my mom and dad couldn't get to because they didn't, you know, they raised me, you know. So, like, it was just watching them is everything. Watching my mom is she deserves a ton of credit for taking in so many kids, my dad, father in the whole neighborhood. And to be honest, the docuseries is really about the people around me because people kind of know me already. They know what I done. Like if you see in the first part, it was not so more, we kind of skimmed through my stuff, you know, just so people could know the people around me and know how everything's tick and how everything came about.
if asked to kind of describe PJ Cousinard in one paragraph, I tell people about the story when you were playing at Wichita State and the students would camp out to be the first to get into the get in the arena, get the good seats down there along the baseline. And one of the students had his basketball shoes stolen. I think they were outside his tent and somebody took them, and you gave him a pair of your Shocker basketball shoes. And that was just kind of the way you were, the way you are. So connect that to what your dad's ministry did, what your mom and dad did, and kind of that attitude of helping other people.
Man, it made me understand situations, like, I'm telling you, Pa, I've seen so many situations where people would think it don't happen in America, and try not to give away too much because it's on the docuseries. But, I didn't see situations where, parents couldn't afford this and kids were really living on their own. I had a situation with a kid. We was telling him that he had to get his permission slip signed by his mom or his dad, and he wouldn't get it done. And it was like 3 weeks. So I said, you know what? I'm going to take you to your mom and dad's house, and we're going to get this permission slip signed, this paperwork signed for you. So I pulls up to his apartment. He don't want me to come in. I go in, find out he'd been living by himself for like 6 months, 6 or 7 months. So them type of situations, growing up in them type of situations and seeing that type of stuff, man, it gave me, a heart to help. And a heart to give. And so, like, I remember, I don't remember the guy's name, but he hit me on Facebook a couple of years ago and was like, "Hey, man, remember you gave me the shoes?" I was like, "Yeah, man." He's like, "Man, thank you. I was like, "Man, that's all good." That's just, like you say, P, a typical day with me. A lot of people, they people feel that I was in this status and they don't know how that person is. But I was so down to earth and so, welcoming to anybody, because I done seen so many situations, and you never know who need love at any time. It's a hard cold world out here, so people need love.
Let's give people the background on the Third Ward. Describe that part of Houston.
So Third Ward is like probably the roughest part of Houston, between Third Ward and Fifth Ward. It's a south side, north side type thing. It's just a place that when we first moved there was struck by poverty, domestic violence. I mean, my first week into Third Ward, I seen so many domestic violence events just in the neighborhood alone. Single parent homes. It's what you would think or what you would see on the TV as, a movie try to portray a ghetto. Like movies portray it, but like I was really from the ghetto, and that's where I live basically from third grade all the way till I came to Wichita State. So I seen it, firsthand, everything, like introduced to drugs, money, cars, girls, all that type of stuff, everything that you portray on a movie scene as for a quote unquote ghetto, I actually lived it.
So you come to Wichita State, play basketball there, play professionally. What motivated you to go back to Houston and start these programs?
My dad and my mom and seeing how they was done, and all they was trying to do was save a community. So and seeing how they were done by the hierarchy of the people that kind of made some decisions, and that's on the docuseries too. But just to seeing how they were done and knowing that a lot of reasons that the things happened to them is because, my dad went to play pro baseball, so he didn't finish college, and my mom came down to Houston with my dad. And so they didn't have the educational background that I had. And so I knew if I go back and do it, it's certain things that they played on my mom and dad about, they can't do to me, and then I'm coming with other friends that's educated, that's in my corner. And I think that was probably the biggest thing I learned from my mom and dad. And that was probably one of my biggest motivators to do it for them, but do it at a bigger level, a bigger scale.
There are Wichita State roots to the name Coos Elite that you talk about on the docuseries. Give us that story.
Oh, okay. So, I think I can't remember the first game I played. But it was an exhibition game. I don't know if it was Emporia or something. I don't remember. Athletes First, I think. And it initially started the year I redshirted, you know, just working out and people seeing me and everybody like, Kuz, because Kuz, no, it is hard to pronounce if you're just seeing it for the first time. So, but definitely, I by the time I played my first game, it had a little buzz on the name. And so I made my first basket and I heard everybody go, Kuz, but I couldn't really gather what they were saying yet, you know, so it did sound like boo, but they was excited, so I knew they wasn't booing me. So, you know, I was like, me and Sean O'Geary was talking, and Sean was like, man, PJ, what they saying? I said, I don't know, I gotta do something else. So I scored again, and I got an and one or something, and we walked into the free throw line, and Sean was like, bro, they saying your name. And I was like, oh, that is what they saying, you know. And then I put it together. So I was like, oh, yeah, that is nice. It was nice. And it stuck with me the whole 4 years. Even to this day, when I go back, people see me in the store or something, and they don't say PJ. They be like, Kuz, every time. And it's neat, man. I love it. And the fans love it. So it was a match made in heaven right there.
So you had an academically challenging path to Wichita State. You got here, you worked hard, you got your diploma, big deal. How does that part, your academic journey, how does that, you know, help what you do now, inform, inspire what you're doing now?
Man, it's everything. And most of the kids that I work with, like right now we got currently like 34, 35 kids in playing Division I. Either basketball or football. I think we got like 23 Division I basketball players or something like that. It's some crazy numbers, but it's all for the education. You know, I do it for the education. I do it for the education and for the families to enjoy the experience of their kids, you know, playing on TV, playing college ball. I know my mom and dad had a blast, you know, and my friends had a blast seeing me on TV, seeing me on ESPN, seeing all that. So that's why I do it. And I think, you know, the educational part of me struggling educationally to get to where I was at, even like Gretchen did an amazing job helping me not only get into college, but endure college and being prepared to, you know, get my degree. Gretchen and Val and Corey, I owe them guys a lot. And Coach Rome was a big factor in me getting to school with my, you know, learning deficiencies and stuff like that. So it was just, you know, being able to say I'm educated now and have my degree and stuff like that is big, but for the most part, it's for the kids so they can experience the same thing. And because nobody give these kids a chance, you know, and like a lot of them, they'll be the first ones graduating in their family. They're already the first ones to go off to college in their family. They're the first ones to be doing something, you know, positive, you know, in most of their cases. So I just think, you know, just to keep inspiring them and understanding, hey, I struggle, you know. So if I struggled and I did what I could do, man, you guys could do the same thing.
So the people you mentioned, Mike Roan was assistant coach when you played, and then Gretchen Torline, Val Wadsworth in academic advising, Corey Torgerson in academics and compliance. What got you on the right path academically? What sparked or what worked for you?
Actually, you know, understanding what it meant to my family probably was the biggest thing, you know, and understanding just, I always understood the ball to stop bouncing. You know, I always understood that. And just knowing I had to be prepared and be ready for that, it was priority, you know, because I figured, you know, I didn't think I could go to college and play Division I, let alone had the expectations of playing in the NBA and doing all the things that I playing overseas and doing all the things that I actually accomplished. So I was always prepared for what I wanted to do after basketball. And so that played a big factor in me. Hey, just straighten up. And Gretchen put in a lot of time. I have to say Gretchen put in a lot of time with me. So it was definitely, you know, definitely, I would say the afterlife motivated me the most.
I'm glad you brought up the first generation aspect of that, because that's something they talk a lot about here at Wichita State. That's a big deal. We, you know, we try to do a lot for first generation students. And it's interesting because I think there are a lot of kids who, you know, obviously don't grow up expecting to go to college or comfortable on a college campus. They don't have the family. It's just a kind of a foreign experience to them, the whole thing. And so Wichita State puts in a lot of resources to try to, you know, get them in and make them comfortable and successful here. What are some of the challenges that those kind of people that, you know, are have, you know, they have no one in their family to lean on about the experience of filling out a FAFSA or, you know, applying for financial aid, all those kind of things. What are the challenges those kind of families face?
Man, that's tough because people don't understand that, you know, you might tell a kid, go to the internet and go figure that out and go sign it out. And people are just not understanding that that kid may not know. So with our kids that come up in Coosa League, we always, I have a group of people that walk these kids through these things. And it's hard to do something for somebody that don't have if you don't have relationships, you know? So like, I understand, you know, the school trying to put in place for this and put it, but if you don't have somebody out there actively in relationships with these guys and these girls coming in to understand, hey, we're here for you. You know, if you need something, this is what you do. This is step one. This is step two. You have to literally walk people through it. Like if Gretchen didn't walk me through everything, I wouldn't have got it. You know, it's just that it's point blank and period because people are not understanding that you don't know. Like it's certain words in the question that you might not understand. You know, you don't know how to click which one you're supposed to be on or which you don't know. And the hardest thing in those guys' cases is the understanding. People just don't understand that you might not know.
I told Gretchen this was not going to turn into a Gretchen Torlein tribute podcast, but I'll give you 60 seconds to talk about Gretchen and what made her such a big part of your success.
Man, her and my counselor from high school, Ms. Shelvin, I owe them the world. You know, they put up with me from day one. I'm not easy to put up with because it get crazy sometimes. But I mean, Gretchen would call me in the office every morning, making sure we was in class. I mean, she did everything, you know, and I owe her a lot that you can't repay her back. You know, she literally changed my life and a lot of my understanding and a lot of ways that I'm disciplined the kids come through Gretchen. You know, how she disciplined me. She didn't yell and fuss at me all the time, even though I probably messed up all the time. She didn't do that. She showed different avenues of how to affect me without just fussing and cussing me out. Now, it was days that she was fussing and cussing me out, for sure. But for the most part, you know, she showed me, okay, well, this is how you do it. And she understood why, you know, they telling me to go do this in class. And she got to understand, with people learning in their first classes, algebra, English, I didn't learn that at high school. Like, my high school didn't prepare me for this. So I was going into these classes hearing words that I never heard before in my life, you know, and people are expecting you to have the grades and be on time and everybody, they want you to answer questions. They want you to at least to sit in the front. No, that's not for everybody, you know. And I was literally just coming to her office every day. Her and Val, I was just coming to them every day like, hey, I don't know what this teacher talk about, you know, and they took the time to spend with me and they did an unbelievable job just, you know, loving on me and walking me through the whole process.
So there would be people in those situations who would throw up their hands and say, I'm frustrated. I don't get it. I don't fit here and walk away. What kept you going?
Knowing that I had a lot of people counting on me back home. That was probably the biggest thing. Like my friends, I have friends and family that literally protected me from street stuff just because they was like, PJ, you going off to go do this. You know, they wouldn't put me into certain situations because they like, hey, PJ, you going off to do this. So I know if I didn't fulfill my duties of going to college, playing 4 years, playing hard every time I touched the floor, I was letting them down, you know, and a lot of people do a lot of stuff for fame, for money, for all type of things. My purpose was for my people back home. You know, I just wanted to make them proud, you know, wanted to make them love me, you know, not that they didn't love me, but wanted to make them love me even more. Like, we really doing this. And if I'm doing it, I wanted them to feel like they was doing it. So that was the motivation for me to keep going. and not just quit. And then the way I was raised, we knew it. Look, I done been through so much stuff that, you know, a classroom wasn't going to take me out. I done been through way harder things than a classroom and words that I don't understand.
Yeah, so if you watch the documentary or the first part, one of the sayings that is brought up is you don't run from responsibility, you run to it. So I guess that's what you're saying there. You were here at Wichita State. You were responsible for getting through it, and that's what you did.
Yes, sir. That's exactly what I did. And my dad constantly reminded me that even when I was in college, he would call me, what you doing? You didn't do this? Hey, don't run from it. Run to it. You know, even that's even weight room with Kerry, all that type of stuff. You know, going to college was a culture shock for me, you know, and I had good parenting. I had a good firm foundation home. I had, you know, supportive parents and kids that I deal with, they don't have that. So imagine just the struggle that they're going to experience, you know, if they don't have somebody to fall back on. So that's kind of why we created this whole, you know, Kuz Elite thing and just trying to help the kids prosper.
Gretchen would tell you that PJ Kuznard really enjoyed the community service projects. They're always having the athletes here do those kind of things to get out and mix with kids and people in the community. And you definitely had a real strong connection with the fans in Koch Arena, really enjoyed that aspect of it. Why? Why did you have such a strong connection with those people?
Man, so my favorite people growing up is Muhammad Ali and Bumpy Johnson. And they were people, they were for the people. So even at a young age, I would watch documentaries on them. I read on them. I look them up, see what they do, all that type of stuff. So just being a people person, you know, and then I wanted to change the culture. When I got there, I didn't like the culture, you know, like I didn't like it. So I wanted to change the culture. And I was like, hey, we gonna be this way. You know, it's going to be this way. I'm going to be with the fans. Coach got on me the first time. First time I got an N1 and I was, you know, the team was in the huddle and I was yelling with the fans. So when we was watching film at the game, Coach got on me. He's like, what are you doing? Da, 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 da. And I'm just like, man, whatever, man. We got to do something. The fans, they pack it out every night. You know, we deserve it, you know, throw them a ball or two, you know, let them know we appreciate them, you know. So definitely being a people person is the engine behind that.
The fans definitely enjoyed it. So let's talk about the docuseries. How did this idea come up?
Man, the filmmaker, Michael Snead, he was getting into film. And he did a bunch of projects, a bunch of highlight tapes, a bunch of music videos. He did some family stuff for people and all that. So he's been my friend for 20-something plus years. Like we even, he played at Texas Southern. So I mess with him all the time about that when we blowed out Texas Southern. I chalk trash to him all the time. But but so he was like shooting for our program and like he did our first Kuz Elite commercial, first Kuz Elite photo shoot and all that. And he was like, hey man, let's shoot a documentary. And I'm like, a documentary on who? And he was like, you. I say, what? Like, what you talking about? And he was like, man, I want to try to learn how to do documentaries. I want to start shooting a documentary on you. I said, all right, cool. Next day he came to my house. We shot like the first part of it. And for the next 3-4 years, he just been getting footage here and there. And a lot of people don't know, like this been a 4-year project. Like it's not something that just happened 2 months ago. You know, it's been in the works for 4 years. So he got a bunch of footage and a bunch of, you know, neat video that a lot of people would be happy and excited to see.
So this would then force you to be on camera talking about your life. Has it brought up any interesting memories, things that would kind of faded out of your brain, and now you talked about it and brought it back?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a roller coaster. So like part one was kind of the introduction of everything, kind of laying down the groundwork. Part two is more for so like introducing all the players that, you know, that came through the program and a couple of good stories in there for part two. And then part three got really emotional, you know, just going down memory lane with like doing events in my time where stuff was happening in my life, you know, as if my best friend passed, and reliving that, you know, it hit home, you know, again. And it definitely just brought up a bunch of memories, a bunch of good times too, you know, where I'm talking about my friends and they remember and they bringing me stories that I didn't remember. I'm like, oh my God, like I remember it now. So it's neat, man. It's going to give you everything that you want in a film. It, laughter, you know, all your emotions, you experience all your emotions once the whole film is done, like once the whole, everybody got first, second, and third part.
At any point did you say, I don't care what highlights you put in there, but the step back jumper against Tennessee in 2006 has to be in?
Man, and it's so funny because, like, so my first time seeing the whole thing was the day part one dropped. So I didn't have a say-so on the film. It was all his idea and all his, the way he put everything together. So I was nervous. I was like, if I don't like it, it don't matter because it's out there now, you know? So he did an unbelievable job. When me and my family watched it for the first time, it was just like a big joy of how he captured the vision of it so vividly. And he deserves a ton of credit. You know, I hope people like it good enough for where he could kind of benefit off of it and kind of take off with his filming thing, because he has a great eye, a great mind of what to put in film and what not to. He nailed it to the T. So we've been getting unbelievable feedback, but definitely, I would definitely want that highlight in there somewhere.
I've enjoyed watching what I've watched. And if I were you, I would have said, yes, you can do anything. I would have surrendered total creative control, except for there need to be lots of Tennessee highlights in there.
Yeah, lots of Tennessee highlights.
All right, yeah, let's wrap it up with some basketball from your days as a Shocker. Okay. Favorite memory, what pops into your brain when you think about your time playing for Wichita State?
Definitely, you know, with the documentary coming out, definitely the Sweet 16 run. Just how much fun we had in the tournament, as far as like after we won the Seton Hall game, the bus ride once we got off the game, the plane ride, the stopping at, I don't remember, it was Ben and Jerry's or Baskin Robbins or something. We stopped somewhere, ate ice cream and all type of stuff. And just getting back to the airport and seeing all the fans and stuff at the airport, like that was probably the most vivid memory that I have, you know, from and Coach said, you'll be reminded about this time for every day for the rest of your life. And literally every day somebody brings that up in some form, shape, or fashion. It is brought up every day.
Coach Mark Turgeon was the coach of Wichita State when PJ played here. That's who you'd be talking about. You know, another moment that always sticks out to me was after beating Tennessee, the way he gathered everybody on the team for the, I assume it was on CBS, for the post-game interview. I thought that was a really nice touch.
Yeah.
And the other highlight that I wrote down, I would guess it has to stick out in your brain, and it's shown in the docuseries, the block on Patrick O'Brien here early in the Valley season, that 2005-2006. That was a big game against Bradley, and that block kind of wrapped it up for the Shockers.
Yeah, definitely. And a lot of people ask me all the time, did you block it twice? And yes, I blocked it twice. I blocked it the first time, he caught it again, and I tipped it just enough, you know, to get it the second time. But my favorite block is the one on Nate Funk. And the one when I threw the ball to the fans was probably my favorite home memory at Wichita State.
Yes, that would have been a good one too. Nate Funk, of course, played for Creighton, and that was a huge rivalry in those days, definitely. Who's the best player you guarded while playing for Wichita State? Who sticks out in your mind? Maybe it's Nate Funk.
It was Nick Young in Vegas. Even though I was sick, he still made some highly contested shots that I was like, oh my God, he was shooting it from behind his head. So I would say Swaggy P was probably the toughest cover that I had, you know. I had fun guarding Lofton in the NCAA tournament. I think that was probably my best defensive performance. And who else? Oh, Marcus Thornton was really good too. LSU.
So Nick Young played for Southern Cal.
Uh-huh.
I'd forgotten that he was in that game.
Yeah, he was in that game. Yep. Yeah.
Well, that's a good list. It was Chris Lofton, right? Or CJ Lofton. Yeah.
Chris Lofton, I think it was Chris Lofton.
Yeah, for Tennessee. Yeah.
For Tennessee, yeah.
That's some good talent. All right. Well, PJ, thank you very much for your time. Once again, a Coos story, 3-part docuseries. I will link to the first part in the show notes. The other 2 parts will be out later this spring. PJ, thanks so much for giving us a few minutes here. I appreciate it.
Thank you, P.
Hi, this is Rick Miuma, president of Wichita State University. Check out the latest episode of the Forward Together podcast. Each episode, I sit down with different guests from Shocker Nation to celebrate the vision and mission of Wichita State University. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you for listening to the Roundhouse Podcast, courtesy of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. We appreciate your time. We encourage you to rate, review, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, such as on iTunes or Google Play. You can find more Roundhouse content at GoShockers.com. Thank you for listening.
And they let him pass it up court, and then it gets picked off. A long three by Pangos, no good. 1 second, it's over. It is over, and Wichita State has beaten the number one team in the nation to go to the Sweet 16. Go crazy, Wichita. I know you are.